Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
Well, it's no exaggeration to say my next guest has seen it all. Cameron Hardiman spent 34 years in policing, from being a police air observer with the Air Wing, joining the Australian Federal Police, and then working in smuggling operations and counter-terrorism. He spent most of his life seeing the best of humanity and the worst. And he tells his story in a new book called 10 Feet Tall and Not Quite Bulletproof, Drug Busts and Helicopter Rescues, One Cop's Extraordinary True Story. Well, it is an extraordinary story. Cameron, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you.
In your late teens, you were surfing and drinking Turkish coffee. What made you want to become a police officer?
It looked pretty exciting for an 18-year-old, and it didn't let me down. It was.
Looks exciting from the outside. It is exciting on the inside.
It's still exciting on the inside, yeah.
How did you get to join the Air Wing?
Look, I got to a stage where I'd seen enough domestic violence and that what I call the merry-go-round of domestic violence, where people were, you know, beating their spouses. We'd charge them, do the paperwork, take them to court. Every week we'd go to court. They get a smack on the wrist or whatever on their back with their spouses the following week. And I got sick of it. So as a kid, I loved helicopters. I grew up as a RAF brat, and back then in the 70s, the RAF had the helicopters, not the army. And I saw that they were advertising the police air wing, and I thought I'd give it a go.
What exactly is it? How many have they got, for example? You're in Victoria.
Yeah, the Victoria Police Air Wing, as it stands right now, has 3 choppers.
Right.
They did have a fourth. They recently sold it. Mm-hmm. They're about to change contracts and get another 3 different ones. But, yeah, the 3 Twinnington Dolphins.
So it's not big. I mean, it's not a big operation, 3 choppers. How many people are in the Air Wing?
Oh, back when I was in it, we had 4 choppers when I had it. We had a single-engine Squirrel and 3 Dolphins. And there was 22 observers and 14 pilots and then admin staff. And that was for a 24-hour operation.
Yeah. And so what sort of skills were they looking for when they picked you up?
For an air observer role, they're solely looking for an experienced police officer that's got a background in general duties policing. That was their preference. And I fit the bill.
You were a bit obsessed with choppers in a way, weren't you?
I was. As a kid, I loved them.
What did you love about them?
Oh, I loved the noise. Yeah. To me, it was an ego thing.
Yeah.
I mean, who
you just wanted to be up in the chopper.
Who wouldn't want to work in a helicopter?
Yeah. One of them waved at you, didn't they?
Yeah, a RAF crewman waved me in the 70s. And I've never forgotten that. I was out the front yard with my younger brother playing war games, as you do at that age. I think I was about 7 or 8. And it flew over the top and waved. He waved at me.
Did you ever think about trying to fly them?
Look, I can. We used to get taught to fly them by the pilots that we work with. They would teach us how to do it. It's in their best interest when you're on a single pilot operation. There's one pilot in the helicopter, a police observer in the front left. Anything happens to the pilot likes to know that you can get it on the ground. So we used to practice it.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd practice being able to just to take it over and land it?
Take it over, fly it and land it, yeah.
Did you ever have to do that?
No, not in an emergency.
Do you think you could have done it?
Yeah, definitely could, but it took a long time. It's not like you were doing a pilot's license and training every week.
So you didn't have a license as such?
No.
It's just that you were pretty confident that if the pilot suddenly dropped dead on you, well, or was incapacitated.
And it's in my best interest too, that if he dropped dead on me, that I could get the helicopter on the ground.
Okay, so you're in there. One of the things that you have to learn is the skill of being winched out of a helicopter.
Yep.
That just seems terrifying to me. Tell me, how does this work? Tell me how it works.
Well, yeah, winching is a sort of a black art, I think. The helicopter is fitted with winches that can lift a certain amount of weight and that hang on the side of the helicopter. But they need to be operated by a winch operator. They can't be operated by the pilot because he can't see underneath the helicopter. So a winch operator operates a winch.
So he basically pulls a lever which turns the winch on and off.
Yeah, at speed. It's a variable speed. There's also a cutter on it, and there's also that the winch operator has to give verbal commands to the pilot to tell him where to move so they stay over the target because the pilot's got to look straight ahead.
That's right.
To maintain a proper hover in a stationary position
is quite difficult, actually.
It's extremely difficult. Now, if you can't see what you're hovering over the top, like a boat, then he needs a winch operator to guide him.
Yes, I'm told by helicopter pilots that this skill, the skill of hovering, is very difficult, actually.
Yeah.
To keep the helicopter absolutely still in one spot, it's a manual skill and it's very difficult.
Well, back in that day that I was at the air wing, we didn't have autopilots.
Yeah.
That could maintain a hover. Yeah. They could fly straight and level the autopilot. So it was all manual.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing when you get winched out?
Wear a flight suit helmet and a full body harness, and a quick release system that we can get off in a hurry.
And the winch is it? And it's attached to what, to the front of your harness?
Yeah. There's a quick release.
Yeah.
Which is like the release that parachutists wear to break off their parachute.
Yeah.
And that's connected to the winch hook to the wire.
So you're 100 feet up in the air. About?
Can be.
Yeah.
The lower the better. I mean, most winches happen at the lowest height they can get.
Tell me about the time that you you tried to rescue a yachtsman from Bass Strait in 2005.
That was Ron Palmer. Ron Palmer was a Canadian, and he'd decided to sail around the world in his homemade yacht.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit Bass Strait right at the time that we had the worst storms in Melbourne. The Spirit of Tasmania had just turned back because the waves had broken its porthole. He'd rolled his yacht, lost his mast, he had no engine, he was injured and he had to get winched off.
Mm-hmm.
So he radioed for help, and the water police who get that radio call for help told us, and we got the job to get him off.
So you're trying to get him off, what, in incredibly high winds and high seas?
About 60 knots.
What's that in Ks?
About 100, maybe.
100k winds.
Yeah. 60 knots. But I mean,
how do you keep a helicopter still in those winds?
Oh, well, the pilot did a fantastic job. So he points the nose into wind, which helps give him lift. The problem was that the yacht's moving, and there's the information and the commands coming from the winch operator, the pilot. And
So what, you were winched down to him, were you?
I was winched onto the yacht.
So tell me about that. How did you feel dangling in the air in 100k winds?
That wasn't the problem. I didn't mind that because we train a lot. We train a lot for winching. So I was quite comfortable on the winch cable.
Mm.
Pretty lonely job hanging on that winch cable. But I'm focusing on where the winch operator is trying to get me to land. And he actually, between him and the pilot, they landed me right in front of where the guy was standing.
Mm-hmm. So he was standing on the...
He was standing right at his doorway into his cabin, facing me, and I landed within 10 inches of him.
So what did you do then?
I went to put a harness on him. But he turned around and went back into the cabin.
What?
He turned around and went back into the cabin. He was instructed to sink his boat, and he hadn't.
Instructed by who?
Water police. Yeah. So.
Oh, I see. Right.
So yeah, his boat. They can't have his boat floundering around in bad weather because it might sink something.
Yeah.
So he was instructed to do that. We'd hoped he'd do it beforehand, but he hadn't. Unfortunately, turned nasty.
So okay. So that leaves you dangling there.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had a sort of window of opportunity to get him off, about a 30-second gap before a wave come past, and then the helicopter would move off station and the yacht would move.
So what happened?
That happened. Winch cable went tight.
Mm-hmm.
There was nowhere to go, and I got pulled off the deck and thrown into the side of a wave.
How'd that feel?
Terrifying.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I remember hitting the water. I think I protected myself with my elbow because it winded me and I ended up underwater, no air in my lungs, and wondering which way was up and when that winch operator was going to get me out of the water again.
So what happened?
He eventually did, but not before I absolutely was in fear of actually taking my next breath. And I thought, with no air in my lungs, they don't get me out. My next breath is going to be full of seawater.
I'll drown.
Yep. And that, you know, that moment of fear was only a split second, but it was terrifying.
So what happened then? Did you?
They got me back out. We tried another two times to get on the boat. We sort of lost the initiative after a while. And we'd arranged that if we can't get on the boat, look, we can't spend all day trying to get this guy if we haven't got the fuel. So they put me in the water beside the boat and I called him in.
So he jumped off the boat?
He did. He didn't want to. But I convinced him.
Okay. Well, then you what, hooked him onto you?
Yeah, put him in the harness again. we've been thrown around by the waves, because you can imagine they were just like a washing machine there. We went under at one stage. We got hit by a massive wave and we both went under. I lost my hold on him. I hadn't done up a chest strap, which we need to secure him into. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the winch operator and the helicopter have moved again, a climb just as the waves have vanished, and we were suddenly pulled out of the water. And we were 20, 30 feet above the water. And for some reason I couldn't work out, there was something going wrong. He was actually sitting and his head was above me, whereas usually the survivor's head's below yours. Mm. And it turned out he was actually sitting on the harness. It had moved down, and when he got pulled out, he was sitting on it like a swing. No, not good.
So they pulled him up into the helicopter that way?
No, he fell backwards. He lost grip. The cable's quite greasy. He was holding onto it.
Yeah.
He'd lost grip, and I felt a kick in the back of my shoulder, and it was his leg, so I grabbed hold of it. I grabbed hold as tight as I could, and we had to just wait. So the poor 73-year-old was hanging upside down about 30 feet over these waves. And I could feel my shoulder going, actually.
Hmm.
And I couldn't give any hand signals. A bunch of hand signals I can give the winch operator to tell him what to do, but I wasn't prepared to let go.
Did you manage to get him back into the chopper?
Yeah, they put us back in the water, which is
okay. Pretty
much standard.
And then you got him probably sorted.
Yeah, take him out of the harness again in between waves, taking more breaths and got him out.
You've had your fair share of trauma too. Tell me about the story of the motorcycle rider who ran into a car.
This motorcycle rider was an American guy on a touring holiday, and he was driving or riding his bike down the Great Ocean Road near Labor's Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And he was minding his own business and doing the right thing, and a car had crossed the road and ran straight into him, and he'd come off and he was critically injured.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, down there there's volunteer ambos, and they do an amazing job, but it was too much for them to handle, so they called the air ambulance, and I was rostered on the air ambulance that day.
Mm-hmm.
And we landed at Labor's Hill. We got picked up by an ambulance and driven down there, myself and my partner, who was a paramedic, and treated him the best we could. We did everything we had to do and could do, and the last, we were just about to put him to sleep so we could intubate him, stick a tube down his throat and so he could get enough oxygen and air. And he said his last words were, don't let me die, just as he went to sleep.
Wow.
And unfortunately, he crashed in the helicopter. We went through everything we possibly could to keep him alive.
But lost him?
We lost him about 10 minutes out of the Alfred Hospital. Couldn't get him back.
I'm talking with Cameron Hardiman. He's written a fascinating book called 10 Feet Tall, Not Quite Bulletproof, about his time in the police force, including the air wing. You've saved a lot of lives too. When you were in the air wing, you had a talisman for good luck, didn't you? What was that?
Yeah, it's a cigar.
what's the story about that?
I don't mind a cigar, and I bought this just before I got to the air wing. I thought I'll keep it for one of those big jobs.
Hmm.
And I must have, I don't know how many big jobs I did that deserve smoking a cigar, but I never got around to it. So now I keep it for good luck.
Mm. I imagine you might, do you keep in touch with people that you've saved? Because you would have saved lives.
No, I don't.
No? Deliberately?
I think a bit of, I mean, I could probably track him down if I wanted to.
Yeah. Do they ever try and track you down?
Look, Ron Palmer actually come back to Australia and took me out to lunch.
Right.
That was nice of him. Yeah. But that's probably it.
Because he would have been dead otherwise.
Well, he would have been. Yeah. And that was nice, but, you know, I'm not sure I want to go there and rekindle all those memories again. It's hard enough without doing that.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps not surprisingly, you've had to struggle with PTSD, haven't you?
Yeah. Mm. I got diagnosed in 2015.
How's that going for you?
It's better now than what it was. In 2015, it was horrific. But you learn a lot with therapy and doctors, and the more you know about it and how to avoid triggers, the better off you are and the more normal you can be.
Hmm. The opening of your book, you quote Major General John Campbell. He says, I am glad of what I've accomplished. I've endured hardship and trauma, pain and loss. I've done so voluntarily. I am not a victim. I am a survivor.
Yep. That's the best quote I've ever read on PTSD.
What does that mean to you?
It means exactly that. I'm not a victim. I chose to do this job. Mm. Unfortunately, it damaged me, but I'd do it all again.
Mm.
There's no, I mean, if you said, look, I'll give you your whole career back, you're going to get PTSD again, I'd still do it in a heartbeat.
Mm.
That's what that's about.
So how are you travelling now today?
I see light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I'm getting help.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. And I know a lot more about PTSD than what I used to.
We kind of all do in a way, don't we? Yeah.
It's just a pity I didn't know years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Hear, hear to that. It's a terrific book, Cameron. And I mean, it's a cliche also to say without people like you, our community is a lesser place. But thanks. There's a cost associated with it, isn't
there? There is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming in and telling your story.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.